ജയം വിഷുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തര ശതശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയചരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹാരാഷ്ട്രയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് ജയം നിതില്യ പ്രവിഷ്ട വിഷുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തര ശതശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹാരാഷ്ട്രയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവ വൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യ ശ്രീ ഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൌരഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപ ഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ഡഗിരി ഗോവർദ്ധാനക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാംക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാംക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാംക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ് പുരി ധാംക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാംക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗൌർ പ്രേമനന്ദി ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു അസംബിൾ ഡിബോഡീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു അസംബിൾ ഡിബോഡീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു അസംബിൾ ഡിബോഡീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ശ്രീ ശ്രീ ഗുരു അൻ ശ്രീ ഗൗരംഗ ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ശ്രീ പ്രഭുപാദ് നമാം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതി ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമി നിതിനാമിനി നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവി ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണി നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരിണി ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ പാർത്ഥായ പ്രതിബോധിതാം ഭഗവതാം നാരായണേന സ്വയം വ്യാസേന ഗ്രഥിതാം പുരാണമുനിനാം മധ്യേ മഹാഭാരതം അദ്വൈതാമൃതവർഷിണി ഭഗവതി അഷ്ടാദശാധ്യായിനി ത്വാ മനസന്ദദാമി ഭഗവത്ഗീതേ ഭവദ്വേഷിണി നമോസ്തുതേ വ്യാസവിശാലബുദ്ധേ പുല്ലാരവിന്ദായകപത്രനേത്ര യേന ത്വയാ ഭാരതതൈലപൂർണ പ്രജ്വാലിതോ ജ്ഞാനമയ പ്രദീപ പ്രപന്നപാരിജാതായ തോത്രവേത്രൈകവാണയേ ജ്ഞാനമുദ്രായ കൃഷ്ണായ ഗീതാമൃതദുഹേ നമ സർവൈഷദോ ഗാവോ ദുഗ്ധ ഗോപാലനന്ദന പാർത്ഥോ വത്സ സുധീർഭോക്ത ദുഗ്ധം ഗീതാമൃതം മഹത് വസുദേവസുതം ദേവം കംസച്ചാണൂരമർദനം ദേവകീ പരമാനന്ദം കൃഷ്ണം വന്ദേ ജഗദ്ഗുരും ഭീഷ്മദ്രോണതടാജയദ്രതജലാകാന്ധാര നീലോൽപ്പല ശല്യഗ്രാഹവതീ കൃപേണ മഹനീകർണേന വേലാകുല അശ്വത്ഥാമാവികർണ ഘോരമകരാ ദുര്യോധനാവർത്തിനി സുത്തീർണ ഖലു പാണ്ഡവൈരണ നദീ കൈവർത്തക കേശവ പാരാശര്യവജസ്തരോജമലം ഗീതാർത്ഥഗന്ധോൽക്കണം നാനാഖ്യാനക കേസരം ഹരികഥാ സംബോധനാബോധിതം ലോകൈ സജ്ജനഷൽപദൈരഹരഹപ്യവീയമാനം മുത ഭൂയാത് ഭാരത പങ്കജ കലിമല പ്രധ്വംസിന ശ്രേയസേ മുഖം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാദമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം യം ബ്രഹ്മാവരുണേന്ദ്രരുദ്രമരുദസ്ത്വന്വന്തി ദിവ്യൈസ്തവൈർ വേദൈ സാംഗവതൈ ക്രമോപനിഷദൈർഗായന്തി യം സമഗാഹ ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിതദ്ഗതേന മനസാവശ്യന്തി യം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദുസുരാസുരഗണൈ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ മോക്ഷസന്യാസയോഗം കൃഷ്ണ കോൾസ് ദി 18th ചാപ്റ്റർ ഈസ് മോക്ഷസന്യാസം. സോ ഇൻ ദ മിഡിൽ ഓഫ് മെറ്റീരിയൽ ലൈഫ് ഹൗ ടു ബി എ സന്യാസി, ദാറ്റ് ക്വസ്റ്റ്യൻ കംസ് അപ്പ് ഹിയർ. മെറ്റീരിയൽ എക്സിസ്റ്റൻസ് മീൻസ് വാട്ട് വി എക്സ്പീരിയൻസ് ഡെയിലി ലൈഫ് ഇൻ ദിസ് വേൾഡ്. സോ Krishna's explanations, if you read here in this 18th chapter, the this creation, which is difficult to understand because it is a part of Maya, that is why it is difficult. Creation, maintenance, some srishti siddhi and samharam, destruction, they are all part of Maya, and therefore it is anatma. And the
in the middle of an Atmajnanam or knowledge of this world, how to culture or cultivate Atmajnanam, knowledge of the self. And that's a challenge for everybody. To cultivate spiritual knowledge in the middle of this matter, materialistic way of life and material existence. And that is what the question coming from Arjuna here at this point in time. Earlier, when we talked about a few verses, you will see in our website, it's called Praudhanubhuti. There is a one topic we discussed long ago, Praudhanubhuti. Praudhanubhuti, it begins with this word, Praudhanubhuti. Prauda, Praudhanubhuti. Prauda, Prauda, Nijanubhuti, Galida. It begins like that. So, Brahma Vidya, the knowledge of the self, cannot be compared with anything else in this world. That's the first thing. The knowledge of the self cannot be compared with anything else in the world. Acharya Swamiji says there that Brahma Vidya, Sarva Vidyam Pratishtam, all other knowledge is useless in relationship with Brahma Vidya. First thing is to understand the importance of Brahma Vidya. Brahma Vidya is so important. Brahma Vidya means the knowledge of the self. And then Brahma Vidya is the foundation for all other knowledge. Other knowledges are coming from Buddhi. Brahma Vidya is coming from the soul. That is a big difference. Yeah. So, in that verse, when we discuss the first verse itself, Prauda, 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 Nijane Bodhi Galidam, Acharya Swami says there that this Indrajalam or this magic, what the creation does in front of us, right? Or you can say hypnotist. That goes away from a person when Brahma Vidya comes in. So, that means all this confusion Maya creates in us, in our mind, leaves us, right? And a person who has become free from that, he is considered to be a guru. Guru is the one who has become free from the impact of Maya. So, one who has come out of this magic of Maya, and if he has woken up, a liberated soul he is called a guru, right? And he has mentioned this twice there, Prauda Prauda Nijanubhuti Galidam. Prauda Prauda Nijanubhuti, twice it is spoken. So we want to listen to those verses, which is already there in the website, in the Vedanta series, it is listed there. Praudhanubhuti. Yeah. So, it is so powerful, the knowledge of the self, that the it is the highest knowledge. Knowledge above everything else, right? And one may think normally that one who has got a very high level of intelligence, buddhi, right, or what you call as brain power, whatever it is, even they struggle with Brahma Vidya. Did you know that? People with the highest intelligence, when it comes to Brahma Vidya, they struggle with it. They cannot get it, what Brahma Vidya is, right? And this is the reason when Bhagavatam was compiled, Vedavyasa Maharshi put that in the first verse itself. What did he say? Janmadhyasa yadonvayadi daradas chartesh abhijna swaral tene brahma hridaya adi kavaye. Next word, mukhyandiyal suraya. Mukhyandiyal suraya means what? This is what it means. Mukhyandi yet suraya. Suraya means people who have very high level of intelligence, learned people. They get lost when it comes to Brahma Vidya. That is how it is. He's saying, Vedavyasa Maharshi is saying there, Janmadhyasya yadonvaya. That is why that first verse in the Bhagavadam is an eye-opener for anyone. You will understand that even with highest intelligence, great learned scholars, when it comes to Brahma Vidya, they get completely lost. ജന്മാദ്യസ്യ സ്വരാട് തേനെ ബ്രഹ്മഹൃദായ ആദികവയെ മുഹ്യന്തി എൽ സൂരയ സൂരയ മുഹ്യന്തി. സൂരയ മീൻസ് പീപ്പിൾ ഹു ഹാവ് വെരി ലേണഡ് ഹൈലി ഇന്റലിജന്റ് പീപ്പിൾ. വെൻ ഇറ്റ് കംസ് ടു ബ്രഹ്മവിദ്യ ദേ ആർ ലോസ്റ്റ്, ദേ കനോട്ട് ഗെറ്റ് ഇറ്റ്, റൈറ്റ്. Surya means that highly intelligent people, right? That means ordinary people have a certain level of intelligence, they can understand. But some people you observe in this world itself, for example, big scientists or big philosophers and certain type of people who can think way ahead than the ordinary people, right? So that means with their intelligence they can show a magic in this world. They mesmerize others with their intelligence. By their activities, they mesmerize others, right? And this is the type of intelligence what is shown to the world by the so-called scientists and the modern science. People who have a little higher intelligence, with their intelligence, they are able to capture things which ordinary people are not able to. Like you can see, now it has gone into this artificial intelligence and things like that. Yeah. So, all these things have come from buddhi. That's the important thing. This modern science and scientific discoveries, inventions and all that, it's all coming from a higher level of buddhi. Buddhi's development, that is. Yeah. In other words, buddhi is the cause behind that. It is source is buddhi. Buddhi is the source, right? Those people even they, when it comes to Brahma Vidya, Vedavyasa Maharshi is saying, Muhyandiyal Suraya. In two words he has put that. Muhyandiyal Suraya. Intelligence is there, but they are also confused. They also cannot understand it. Right? So, why is that it is not happening to them? Even for them. The reason for that is that simplicity has not come to them. Brahma Vidya, to understand Brahma Vidya, Krishna is saying this later, we'll come to that later, that Brahma Vidya is understandable to those who have that simplicity, and if that simplicity comes, one will go into that sannyasam stage. He will automatically go into sannyasam stage, right? And it is a thing that happens to people in a natural way. That sannyasam state, in a natural way, right? generally, when we say simplicity means, what do we mean by that? We normally say that if you live a simple life, that you have a simple habits of eating and a place to sleep, simple dressing, clothes, and we think that is simplicity, isn't it? That's how generally in the world people think that he lives a very simple life, we say. So simplicity, that's how it is understood. But here, simplicity does not mean that. Here, simplicity means that a person who has become free from desires, I don't want anything in this world. If you have reached that state, that person is simple. That he is not feeling the need for anything else in this world. Becoming free from desires, that is what Krishna considers a person is simple. Not that one lives simple with his body, that means who eats less and simple diet and simple clothing and simple accommodation and peaceful about those things. That alone Krishna doesn't consider simplicity. Krishna's account about simplicity is that one who has become free from any kind of desire, and that is the stage where sannyasam comes to him. He doesn't have to become a sannyasi, sannyasam comes to him. That's the way Krishna will explain that later, right? So, in other words, his buddhi, that person, his buddhi, is such that in a very simple way he can solve the problems of this world. That means, in whatever situation happens in this world, he will be able to remain in a peaceful state. And such a person is simple. Irrespective of what happens in the world, able to maintain a stable mind unaffected by that or undisturbed by that, he is the one who is simple, Krishna says, right? So, that means in the complexities of this world, in the middle of all that, able to remain unaffected by that and control the control one's thoughts and emotions, and in order to show to us that this is the reason that right in the middle of Mahabharata Yuddham, Vedavyasa introduced Bhagavad Gita. This is the reason for that, to show to us what is spiritual life. Spiritual life means, irrespective of what goes on in Maya's world, one who can stay in a stable state, unaffected by that, that not being affected by what happening around us, and that state of consciousness, that is sannyasam. That's what, how Krishna begins with sannyasam. Yeah. For example, Mahabharata Yuddham, if you look at it, there's a long description of Mahabharata war in the Mahabharata book itself, right? Millions of people died in that war. Some people say 640 million. Some people say more than that. People died in that war, right? And Vedavyasa Maharshi gives a list of how many Achauhinis participated in that war on both sides, on the Kaurava side and the Pandava side, right? And a lot of people died. And for what purpose? Because of the family quarrel. That's how it started, isn't it? Family quarrel it was fought between the Pandavas and the Kauravas. Basically it was Ragadvesham. Ragadvesham among them, right? In the middle of all that Ragadvesham, Krishna, who is the absolute truth himself, he can do anything he wants with that, right? But such a person, he tried hard to stop the war. Krishna tried to stop the war, and in that process, he was very many times insulted by Kauravas. They insulted him. Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana and many other members of that clan were very offensive to Krishna that time, right? In spite of that, he tried to solve the problem. Somehow or the other bring a peace between the two sides, right? And he even begged to the extent of to bring peace, not to fight, right? You know, if you must have read all this, that Krishna says, if you can't give them a whole half of your kingdom, give them five villages. If you can't give that, at least give them one village. If you can't give them five houses, if you can't give them, at least give them one house to live. Duryodhana was very obstinate. He said, no, I cannot do that, he said. He said, I won't even give them place to even to put a needle on. That's how it says. You want to put a needle on, that much land, I'm not going to give it to them. And he wanted Pandavas to leave and go to the forest, right? At this moment, everything failed. Krishna understood the situation, yeah? And he has shown to the world that this position of power, of those days, obviously the kingdom, king's power, army, the government, all these things is going to cause problems. And Krishna knew very well that a life centered around all these things, power, position, army, money, wealth and all that, will not survive here in Maya. His point was that in his childhood, when he spent the time in Vrindavanam, playing with the cowherd boys and other people there who were living there at that time, and Krishna considers they were more normal people than these people who are fighting this war. The people who are living in Vrindavan and living a simple life in many ways, their life Krishna considers more normal than the people in Mahabharata war, the in Hastinapuram, between the Kauravas and the Pandavas. Krishna didn't think of them very normal. Krishna considered these people in Vrindavanam as normal. Right? So, everything else was abnormal as far as Krishna was concerned. Right? And so, what did Krishna decide? Krishna decided to hand over his own army to Duryodhana. He said, you can have my army. They'll fight for you. Right? And in other words, Krishna's mind was, let them also go from this world. Yeah? Because they are also a problem. You will see this in the Bhagavatam. What did it say, sir? If you look at the first canto, there is a verse said in the 15th chapter, while this was discussed, when the Kali attacked and Parikshit was installed at that time, if you look in the 15th chapter, verse 34, Yayaharal Bhuvo Bharam Tam Tanim Vijahavaja Kandagam Kandage Neiva Dvayam Chabishidu Samam. This is what that means. Kandagam Kandage Neiva Dvayam Chabishidu Samam. Yayaharal Bhuvo Bharam Tam Tanim Vijahavaja. What he's saying is that when burden becomes unbearable, kandagam kandaye naiva, when you get this understand, you know, in the villages when people go walking, sometimes a thorn gets into the feet. Now we don't understand it because we are covered with 3-4 socks and the shoes and the boots and all that. We won't know this. But in them days, people while walking, when a thorn gets in, they will look for another thorn and take out this thorn which has gone in with another thorn and throw away both the thorn away. And this was what Krishna has done there. So, similarly, Krishna decided that Krishna's army is all Yadavas. Are they not? They are all Yadava army it is. He decided that the Yadavas also should leave, along with the Kauravas and the others, army. Whole army, everyone gone. Yadavas gone, Kauravas gone, Pandavas army also has gone. Right? And he has used them in this war. Krishna has used for that purpose to clean up the whole place. And this was the only way he could do that. So, and that is why when he talks to Uddhava later, he says to Uddhava, Kim badram kim abadram va dvaidasya avastuna kiyal vajodidam tadadradam manasodhyadam eva va. If you look into Ekadasham, you will see this. Keeping this in mind, in this world, Maya's domain, there is nothing right or wrong. Kim badram kim abadram va, because it's dvaidam. Dvaidasya avastuna kiyal. And vajodidam tadanardam manasodhyadam eva va. Whatever we talk and whatever we comes out from our mind, it's all anyway, it's maya. Vajodidam tadanardam. They're all lie actually, because it is maya who is making us to act in a particular way due to our prarabdham. And vajodidam, and whatever we speak and whatever we think, it's all, because it has come from our mind and the buddhi and all that, there is nothing in there which is badram abadram. You cannot say anything is badram or abadram. Kim badram kim abadram va dvaidasya avastuna kiyal vajodidam tad anudam manasodhyatam eva va. Saying like that, Krishna put that in a very one verse to Uddhava. Right? So, because it is dvaidam, everything is dvaidam here. Right? All this doesn't mean anything. And he left his own people to fight against him. This is the interesting part. You never heard of that in a war, isn't it? Normally, never happens this. Krishna's army, he sends goes to the other side and fights against Krishna and Arjuna. Right? So, therefore, Krishna says to Arjuna at that time, in a peaceful way, kill them all. In a peaceful state, right? Everyone will go from here. Nobody will be left out at the end, right? And there is nothing here for me to give or take from here. And similarly, you should not think these are my people and they are my people. These are your people and they are my people. You don't have to think like that, he says to Arjuna. Krishna is saying to Arjuna, before the war, you don't have to think about them, that they are all my people, so you can't fight. And I'm also not thinking that these are all your people. This my people, your people is all Dvaitam it is. It's coming from Dvaitam, isn't it? When you identify with the body, that this is not spiritual knowledge, to think that my people and your people. So that is what he is saying here. Kim bhadram kim abhadram va. If you understand that verse properly, then you will see Krishna's logic, where Krishna is coming from. Kim bhadram kim abhadram va. What is right and wrong here? They are all anyway meant to go. They should go now. Dvaidasya avastu nakiyal. They are avastu. Vajodidam tadanurudam manaso dhyadam eva va. Saying this, so in the middle of all this, Krishna is saying to Arjuna, you have to act without ahanda and mamada, me and mine. Without that you have to act, he says to him, right? So, more or less, Krishna is presenting himself as Rudra here, the cause of destruction. Yeah, Srishti Siddhi Samharam is Rudra, isn't it? Rudra is Samharam. Shiva. Shiva's another form is Rudra, right? Here it is not Krishna. Universal form actually is Shiva, not Krishna. Krishna's Rudra form is coming out. Rudra form is the destruction form. That's coming out, right? So, in Bhagavad Gita, when you look at that, the Visharupa Darshanam, actually it is Rudra form, right? That is why in Vishnu Sahasranamam, Sarvam Sharva Shivastanur Bhudadur Nidhiravyaya Sambhava Bhavana Varta Prabhava Prabhurishvara. If you look at all those verses in the Sahasranamam, it's all referring to Shiva there. Bhishma tells Vishnu Sahasranamam to Yudhishthira. And there he says, Sarvam Sharva Shivastanur. These are all words for Shiva. Shiva's form is Rudra form. That means Shiva is, Shiva means that Shiva has various names, like Krishna has various names. That form Shiva also has various names, right? While Srishti happens, he is Mridha. And while destruction happens, he is Rudra. Rudra form, right? And while without doing anything, when he is in the state of Jnani, he is Shiva. While creation happens, he is Mridha. And while destruction happens, he is Rudra. And when he is in his peaceful state, as Dakshinamurti, he is Shiva. So, all these things are there. We connect Bhagavad Gita and the Vishnu Sahasranamam and Bhagavadam, you will find all these connections there. Right? So, in Kundi Devi also will say this. Kundi Sudhi, if you look, you will feel say there that you are Ishana, says to Krishna, right? Because you have come to destroy everything. To destroy everything, right? And this destruction, when we see in Maya, we get frightened. For Krishna, it is Anandam. It is bliss, it is, when destruction happens. We are inside this Maya, everything what happens in Maya disturbs us, is it not? War happens, we get disturbed. And then we say, why God is doing all these things? We keep asking. But you have to understand all these things from Krishna's position. Krishna is saying, as far as Krishna is concerned, destruction is happiness for him. Anandam, it is bliss for him, right? Death is also bliss, right? And Ananda Sandro Bhava, it says. So, and that is why Shiva's Tandavam, that dance what he does, cosmic dance, it is called Ananda Tandavam. When destruction happens, he is enjoying it. Lord Shiva, while destruction is happening, he is dancing and enjoying it, the destruction. See, what we won't understand it that way. We are conditioned by Maya. So everything what Maya does, we are looking at it. When the war happens, we get disturbed over it. So much destruction happens, so many people dying. But from Krishna's position, when you look at it, it is not like that. For Krishna, this is anyway, it is Maya. It is meant to go one day or the other. It will go in its own way. Nobody can change that. That is why they say, don't try to think that you can change this world. It is not possible. Right? So, he is not feeling any distress when destruction happens or any problems within himself. And one coming to that state, that is the success of life. Success of life, right? In other words, what Krishna is saying is that you won't be able to control this world on your own. Nobody can control this world. And that is what Krishna has shown to us. He's saying that this war is meant to happen. It will happen. And I can also not stop it. Krishna is saying, I can also not stop this war. It is meant to happen. It's a part of that process of destruction. And it will happen. Right? And even though Krishna spoke to Arjuna in the beginning, Arjuna was not willing to give up, right? And Krishna says there to Arjuna that you have come here to fight. And you will fight whether I tell you to fight or not to fight. You are going to fight, he said. So it is not possible to change this world. It's not possible to change this world. The only thing what one can do, that in this situation, how one can stay peaceful. That is the science Bhagavad Gita is trying to teach. Bhagavad Gita's idea is not to change the world. This is a misunderstanding people have, that we can change the world. You cannot change the world. World will go on its own way. In the middle of all this chaos, how can one stay peaceful? And that is the science of Bhagavad Gita. This is the point to understand first. Many people think that if I preach and change and talk to people, the world is going to change and everything is going to become peaceful. It will never become peaceful. The world is Maya's domain. Maya has a plan and Maya will continue doing what she has to do. These higher plans, we don't know what Krishna's plans are. That is between Krishna and Maya. So Krishna is saying that this Maya's process, she will continue like that. Nobody will be able to change that. But in the middle of all this chaos, how can one stay in a peaceful state? That science is Bhagavad Gita. This is the way to understand Bhagavad Gita. Right? So, there are so many examples in Mahabharata. Vedavyasa Maharshi is trying to bring this to us, this point to us, right? That when the war started, Drona created a Padmavyuham to prevent the Pandavas getting in. Because Drona was the commander-in-chief. He's a smart person, wasn't he? Taught Arjuna, everybody about the... he was the head of the, you can say, the defense research and defense development, everything. Drona knew a lot of things what others didn't know. Yeah. And Duryodhana came and told Drona that in the war, we have to win this war. And Bhishma, Drona, they were all very loyal to Duryodhana. And they wanted to please him. So, Drona created this Padmavyuham and he told Duryodhana, even Arjuna won't be able to break it. Because Arjuna was considered to be the best archer at that time. Sarvado Bhadram, it says. But when the war started, within 10 minutes, both Arjuna and Krishna were inside, about 10 kilometers inside the battlefield, within this Padmavyuham, what he has created, right? Krishna, Arjuna, his chariot, they were all inside, right? And Duryodhana comes to Drona and he abused him. Duryodhana abused Drona for this, that he didn't do a good job. And he is responsible for the Pandavas breaking in and coming inside. Drona says to Duryodhana, what can I do? He says, You see, Arjuna is not the problem. He says, you know that person who is driving that chariot? He is the problem. He said, you can't do anything with him. You cannot do anything with him, he said. Right? If he gets a small gap, he will get through that. That's what Drona said to Duryodhana. Drona had to answer. Duryodhana was not very happy about it. Duryodhana has not understood Krishna yet. Drona has understood. Bhishma has understood. This not, they already knew that the war is over. It's already decided and settled everything. Yeah. So whatever you may do, Drona says to Duryodhana, as long as he is driving the chariot will be inside. Nothing you can do, right? And whatever I may do from the very best, with all my knowledge, I lock it up. It's not going to work, he said. And this is what we have to learn from Krishna. Yoga Karmasu Kaushalam. This Yoga Karmasu Kaushalam is this. What that means is, how to conduct problems which cannot be solved otherwise, right? And even in life, such problems comes in front of us, which cannot be solved by our ability or our effort or our capacity. Still, you are not able to solve the problem. Even in the middle of that, one has to, and such problems comes in front of us, right? One should be able to face that situation. How to face that situation? That is what this Yoga Karmasu Kaushalam means, when Krishna said that in the Bhagavad Gita, right? And some instances, there may be some options to do. And some instances, with knowledge, one has to break through. In situations like that, through knowledge, one has to break through, right? And this expertise, even in any situation, to deal with it and to get through that, is what Krishna is explaining to us. That is the science of Bhagavad Gita, right? So, you know, Vedavyasa Maharshi calls him as Yogeshwara, isn't it? Why is he called Yogeshwara? Because of these things. That under all circumstances, in the middle of all karma, right? Mahabharata war was not a simple affair, isn't it? So many people got involved, and such a huge, heavy karma was going to be sorted in 18-20 days time. This happened, right? And in the middle of all that, able to remain so peaceful, Krishna was able to remain so peaceful about everything. Yoga Karmasu Kaushalam. That is what it means. That means, how to what extent you are balanced inside, to that extent you become an expert in your karma. To the extent you are balanced inside, karma is not a simple thing as we sometimes you see like this in in the Facebook and all, they will say sometimes, Karen got instant karma, they say. And they will show something like that. They don't understand this, the what karma actually means, right? So, throughout Mahabharatam, you will know this thing. Not to understand Bhagavad Gita, you have to understand the background of Mahabharatam also. Just don't study Bhagavad Gita alone on its own, because this is in the background of Mahabharatam, this is happening, right? So, Mahabharatam has a big influence on Bhagavad Gita, in everything what is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is not separate text as such. It's a part, that is why it was put right in the middle of Mahabharatam, right? So, Mahabharatam, throughout Mahabharatam, you can see this, right? So, the more you become balanced in karma, to that extent, you will become very smart in karma. Karma, smartness in karma is not the way like we say about karma. When a karma is performed and if a good results come from that, we think that we have done a good karma. From Shastra point of view, that is not the good smart thing. when by doing a karmam, if it is not affecting you, that means you have done the karmam well. That is the way Shastram sees, not based on the result of the karmam. In the world today, people think that you are very good at your work. Means if the results are good, you are considered to be good at your work. Is it not? That is avidya way of looking at it. From the Shastram point of view, when you look at it, if you have done a karmam, if it has not affected you in any way, that means yoga karmasu kaushalam. That is the kaushalam of the karmam. Karma yogam. Karma yogam's kaushalam is in that. In doing karmam in such a way, without getting affected by that. And that's not so easy. And that is why these examples given. We do karmam, we get affected by that, right? But Antaryami does karmam, Antaryami is not affected. And that is the examples. For example, breathing going on in our body. It's a karmam, isn't it? Breathing is a karmam. Digestion that happens, the food, it's a karmam. Blood is circulating in the body, it's a karmam. Going to toilet, it's a karmam. This is all happening within this body. We are not even conscious of that, is it not? It happens without our knowledge. Who managing it? Antaryami is managing it from inside. So when doing all these things, Antaryami is not affected by that. He just does it and he is not affected by that. In the same way, like Antaryami does with everything within our body, if you can do your karmam in this world in the same way, unaffected by anything, then your karmam, yoga karmasu kaushalam. That is the way Shastram sees that. Not other way. Karmam is not based on the result. This result-based and result-oriented way of judging a karmam is a stupid thing. It doesn't mean anything. Because in Maya, sometimes you will win, sometimes you will lose. And it is not because of you it has happened. It is based on your prarabdham it has happened. So, to know the subtle side of karmam is very difficult for most of the people to understand that. Everybody thinks, I've done well and I got the result. I didn't do well, so I didn't get the result. That's how they see the karma, isn't it? That is a karmi's attitude. Karmi thinks like that. Because of their effort, everything is happening. But Shastram is saying that when a karma is performed, if it has not created even a scratch in your consciousness, in your awareness, and if you are able to do that, in that way, it is yoga karmasu kaushalam. That is what that word means. Yoga karmasu kaushalam means this. Yeah, able to do that. Yeah. So that yogam is kaushalam, right? Yeah. So, so in karmam, if there is yogam, then that karmam will become kaushalam. If there is yogam in that karmam, then it becomes kaushalam, right? And if it happens, then you will be able to remain unaffected, untouched by that karmam. Untouched by whatever happens around us, it won't disturb us. It won't affect us, right? Unfortunately, these are the main things to learn from Bhagavad Gita. This is Krishna's main message in the Bhagavad Gita. While living in this world, in the middle of this whole, actions, what is going on around us, because everyone feels it when things are getting difficult in many ways, and sometimes material situations are changing continuously. Within yourself there is problem, within the family there is problem, within the society there is problem, between the countries there is problem, and now the whole world is under problems. And in the middle of all that, if one can remain in that state what Krishna is talking about, Krishna says that is yoga karmasu kaushalam. Right? So, and these are the things what should be taught to people, to the children also. Right? But this is not considered education even today. All this education, this knowledge, what Shastram is saying, is not even considered education. Instead, all useless things, just garbage, is thrown at us, and and we consider that as knowledge. Yeah, that is knowledge. That's why if you look into the first verse itself in the Bhagavad Gita, right? Prior to that, Acharya Swamiji says there that sarvasya evam Gita Shastrasya Arthaha, he says, asmin adhyaya vasamhritya sarva cha vedartho vaktavya iti evam artham ayam adhyaya arabhyade. He's saying here that before Krishna begins this chapter, that the whole Gita Shastra, Gita is called like that, Gita Shastra, right? Gita Shastram, and completely is condensed and spoken in this chapter. Sarva Vedartha, he says. Yeah. Sarvasya eva Gita Shastrasya Artha. The complete Gita Shastram, its essence is in this chapter, right? And he says here, and then he said, adhyaye upasamhritya sarvacha vedartho vaktavyam. In other words, whole Vedic knowledge is in this chapter, 18th chapter, whole Vedic knowledge, right? Acharya Swami says there that Krishna wanted to talk about Vedam and its whole message, right? And he decided that, and he has begun this chapter, 18th chapter. Right. In the previous chapter also, if you look, you will see, before he began this chapter, he mentions there that so many things in the 27th to 28th of verses of the 17th chapter also, right? Krishna has spoken a lot of things in that 17th chapter, right? In this 18th chapter, Krishna wanted to talk about sannyasam. What is sannyasam means, right? One has to work in this world. It is normal that everybody has to work, right? And one doesn't have to be idle, right? And Krishna says that you cannot live in this world without working. That is the way the world is, right? So if you look into the third chapter, while Krishna refers to that, if you look into the third chapter, 8th verse, what does Krishna say that? He says, Niyadam kuru karmatvam, karma jnayo akarmana, sharira yatra abhijate na prasiddhya akarmana. He said that, yeah? He says, Niyadam kuru karmatvam, karma jnayo akarmana, sharira yatra abhijate na prasiddhya akarmana. Perform your duty, prescribed duty, for doing so is better than not working, right? One cannot even maintain one's physical body without work. He said that in that third chapter, 8th verse. Yeah. So, for life in this world, Krishna gave a name for that in that verse. What is that? Sharira Yatra. That's the word Krishna has used. Life, what we live in this world, it is considered to be a journey. And Krishna calls it as Sharira Yatra. Sharira Yatra Vijate, he says. Yeah? Sharira Yatra means what? Life in this world. Sharira Yatra. That means our journey from birth to death in this body, right? because this body is going to be corpse at one day. You see, dead body it is. And carrying this body from birth to death is life. Carrying this body from birth to death is the life, right? And because you are in this journey, while going in this journey with this body, what will happen is you will get some happiness and distress and all other problems and hunger, thirst, ragam, duesham. This is all part of this journey from birth to death, right? So because it is a journey, sharira yatra, Krishna is saying you have to work. And that is also part of that, to work and to live in this world, right? So, sometimes people say, oh, I don't want to work. I'll refrain from doing work, he says. Krishna is saying, if you do that, that will also become a work, not working. That will also have its effect, right? So, important thing what Krishna is saying is that, whatever you have to do, do it. But don't stick to it. Able to develop that nature, right? So, results should not be the guiding factor and able to do karma in that way. How many people can do that? Because results decide everything at the end, right? So, in order to develop that expertise, that able to do karma unaffected by the results and not sticking to the results of the karma and able to carry out that karma, Krishna calls it as yoga, right? And he's saying here that calls that as tapasya or viryam or spiritual secret. He calls that adhyatma rahasyam, right? And if you want to understand Bhagavad Gita, the best thing way to understand Bhagavad Gita is to look at Krishna himself. He was the person who has shown the world the science of Bhagavad Gita, how it works practically in the world. He started the journey from the prison house on the day he appeared in this world. We are used to thinking he is a supreme personality of Godhead and we all know he is to bow down, and that's fine, that's okay. But beyond that, there is another side of Krishna who spoke Bhagavad Gita and wanted to show to the world the science of Bhagavad Gita, how it works in this world. And the best example of that is Krishna himself. There's nobody else, right? The day he was born, he started his journey in this world. Sharira Yatra began with that, right? And till the last day in Prabhasam, where he left this world, that journey continued. There was never one day Krishna was sitting idle anywhere, continuously working, one thing or the other, right? That day, Vasudev took him in his arm and walked, the day itself he was born, walked all the way to Gokulam, right? And from that day onwards, this started, this movement started, right? Then different demons came, Kamsa came, and Trinavarta and all other big demons would come, and Krishna had no time. He was busy with everybody. He was having an audience from the day one itself. Sixth day Pudana came, and then after that a series of visitors, one after the other. Trinavarta, Shagadasura, Trinavarta, and then once Valsasura, Denugasura, Keshi, a lot of people daily visiting him for one reason or the other, right? So, a person who was busy from childhood, you have to look at it from Krishna's position, yeah? Don't go by what the society is telling us today, right? A person who has been very busy from childhood, it was Krishna, right? Then he went to school. Krishna says it's all a waste of time going to school. This is the first lesson Krishna taught the world. This going to school is a waste of time. And therefore, he limited his education to 2 months. That's enough, he says. It's more than enough to go into school. We spend 10 plus, 2 plus, 3 plus, 2 plus. By the time you come out of this so-called education system, best 25 years of your life gone. And by then all for the sake of this belly. Krishna is saying it's a total waste of time. This is Krishna's opinion. Krishna is saying here that he says after 2 months, school closed. No more education after that, right? And then in Sandivani, this happened in Sandivani's ashram, isn't it? And Krishna says, that's all you have to know in life. You don't need to know a lot in life. And we learn all kinds of rubbish. So much rubbish has been pumped into our head. The best part of life, when you could learn something, I don't know what you have learned, but I can see what I've learned is also a total waste. What Aurangzeb did, what Akbar did, what Alexander did, what Hitler did, what Napoleon did, what good does it help me? They have come and they have dead and they have gone. Now knowing what happened to them, and I was seriously studying this, I'm sure the same thing happens here also. So practically you can see this whole education, so-called education, was, and then they were told that water is hydrogen and oxygen, two parts of hydrogen and one part of oxygen. This, how does it help me? How did it help us in knowing all these things, right? So Krishna decided this education is all useless. School education is completely useless, right? So he decided that whatever I have to know, I have understood in 2 months' time. That's the maximum time Krishna says you need in education. Not more than 2 months. Not 25 years. So, and about Krishna is saying himself that whatever he learned, he put it into practice. He said how to look after the cows. Krishna learned that. How to play the flute. And that is why in Kaliyavardhanam's story, at the end, Krishna is addressed like this. Akhila kaladi gurur nanartha. That's the last word. Akhila kaladi gurur nanartha. In other words, all these arts and music and everything, the original person who knows these things is Krishna. It has come from Krishna. Right? So, and when Kaliya came with so many hoods, Krishna got on top of that and started dancing, right? And many instances, great personalities have understood this message from Krishna. For example, our Gandhiji also said the same thing in one instance. He said, I love storms in life, right? So Krishna is saying, in childhood itself, dancing over Kaliya, he knew how to handle the situation. So many storms coming. This Kaliya Mardhanam story, if you look at from the Tatum side, that is what it is pointing at. That all these different hoods are coming as different problems, but Krishna knew how to handle each one of them. Right? So, that's all one has to know. That means whatever problems keep coming in life, able to handle them, and able to remain unaffected by that. That's all we have to learn in life. Problem is finished with that. With the life is concerned. Nothing else. Whatever problems comes in life, how not to get affected by that and able to remain on top of it, unaffected by it. That's all it has to know, right? But in our life, it doesn't happen that way. We were driven by the society. Society told us you have to do so many things and we followed the society and now we are where we are in this situation, right? Now if you think that many people, this is, idea has been mooted into our head that once you retire, life will be very peaceful after that. People think like that, is it not? After retirement, life is going to be very fantastic. I mean, you're retired from your work, family life is all coming to a close and you're feeling more relaxed and you can say, oh, now I'm free, becoming free, right? So at that we know it's foolishness to think like that, right? So it is impossible to say at any stage in this world that you can retire from life like that and where you'll have no problems. That stage is never going to happen, right? And you know, like, you know these Bharatanatyam players, when they dance, right, what they do, before they start dancing, they'll go to the stage and check how strong the stage is for them to make their different movements, right? And similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam is saying about Krishna, he is Agila Kaladi Guru Nanartha, he says. He is the Adi Guru. And then one who has made one's life itself a Kala. Kala means art. One who has made one's own life as an art, right? And that means, if you look at Krishna's 125 years here, there was not one moment when he was in a, without problems. Continuously problems. That's all what Krishna had throughout, isn't it? And it started with day one itself. The Vrindavana Leela, if you look, every day there was problems. Mathura Leela, problems. Dwaraka Leela, the greatest of all the problems. Finally, finished with Mahabharata war, everything, he rounded up all the demons together and sent them away, came back and went to Prabhasam, left this world. So, when dancing that on Kaliya, he talks about, he held the tail with the hand, left hand, and jumped on from one head of the Kaliya to another head. He was jumping on, right? So, the idea behind that is, if you hold the tail of the snake, then the snake can't do anything. It cannot move very much freely, right? And that holding of the tail at the back, and then dancing over the head, spoken in the Bhagavatam as a pastime, the tattvam behind that is, with spiritual knowledge, if you live in this world, you will not get disturbed by the pressure of the world, by the events of this world. These are all connected to each other, because I'll tell you why. That Brahma Pucham Pratishtam, it says in the Upanishad. Brahma Pucham means the tail. So that is why the Kaliya's tail, holding that tail, Krishna dancing on top of the heads, is to show to us, with spiritual knowledge inside, if you deal with the world will not disturb you. The world will not affect you in any way, right? The material knowledge won't help. It has to be the spiritual knowledge, right? And that is why it was given with that particular word, referring to Krishna, Agila Kaladi Guru Nanartha, right? What is the Bhagavad Gita's knowledge actually? Bhagavad Gita's knowledge is this, that one should be able to live in this world, not to get frightened about that, right? You can see like this way, Bhagavad Gita's commentary is Srimad Bhagavatam, basically. Bhagavad Gita's a detailed commentary is Srimad Bhagavatam, right? And all these pastimes in the Bhagavatam is nothing but a representation of the different things what Krishna has spoken to Arjuna in practical life. It may take some time to understand that, but Krishnavadaram, Krishna's appearance is based on this principle, right? What is that kala he is talking about? He is talking about that happiness inside us, anandam inside us, right? And that anandam, because we, by our original nature, we are not in an unhappy state. Anandam is the nature of the soul, is it not? Anandam is the nature of the soul, right? So, when one has conducted one's life in the way Krishna has spoken, and when it comes to its final stages of life, at that time, one experiences that happiness inside, and Krishna calls that as sannyasam. So, when the sannyasam happens to a person, after living in this world, going through these experiences, and able to see and look at it, by the way Krishna has spoken about it, and able to live unaffected and untouched by that, and that stage Krishna calls it as sannyasam, right? What that means is, when it comes to that stage, I am not going to give up anything. What happens is, if I give up something, it will stay within me. It will not go. But if I feel inside, I don't need any of these things anymore, that is sannyasam. But that has to happen that way. Vairagyam is like that. I cannot give up on my own anything. If I give up something forcefully within from myself, my needs or life, whatever I like, its vasana will still stay inside. But instead, if I start feeling within that I don't need anything anymore for this living, right, then I don't have to give up anything because it is gone from me once for all, right? And it will not stick to me anymore. On its own, it has gone, right? So, they give these examples. You know, the coconut when you scrape, green coconut, when it is scraped, there something will stick to it inside still, isn't it? But if you dry the coconut a lot, fully dried, then what happens? The pulp gets separated from the shell. And you can break it and take the pulp out very easily. And the pulp is not causing any problems, right? Similarly, Krishna is saying here that proper knowledge, if it comes inside a person, spiritual knowledge comes in a person, he'll be like this kind of coconut. That sticking will completely go from inside. Nothing in this world will stick to him anymore because he has become free from everything, right? So, that nisangada, that's what is called nisangada, right? That nisangada is the one has to come at the old age. Old age is for that, yeah? Actually, the greatest challenge in life is old age. Most of the people think youth is the biggest challenge, is it not? People say, old age people don't think as a challenge as such. Old age is just tolerating everything. But normally you are in a challenging mood in your youth, when you are young, isn't it? You want to take on the world, conquer the world, and so many other things, right? So, so therefore people say that the youth is the difficult times because you have a big challenge in front of you, a life in ahead of you and things like that. No, Veda Shastram doesn't say like that. They say that Adhyalma Jeevitam, whether you are successful or not, its testing ground is old age. In spiritual life, whether you are successful or not, the testing ground is old age. Not the youth, right? Why is it like that? In youth, our nature is like this, that we will find a way for happiness somehow. We'll look for happiness in some way or the other, right? And you've got the energy to do that, right? And our nature, I'm saying, while you are in your youthful age, is that when you get something, you'll be happy. Success in your material life, right? So, and then you're peaceful about that when you get some success in youth, in material life, right? And that's how youth goes. But in spiritual life, when in the old age, when you get these things, illnesses, death, and all other people with whom you had close association, they are leaving you. When these problems come at the old age, actually that is the testing ground. Not the youth, where what we have gone through, where we thought that is a challenge. Generally people think like that. In the early days in youth, you think there is a big challenge ahead of you. Actually, youthhood is not the challenge. Old age is the challenge, according to
the rishis. Rishis are saying that when old age comes, death is coming closer, diseases are coming, and all the people close to you are leaving you one after the other. When all these things, how you deal with that situation, that is the challenge, real challenge. And that challenge is at the old age. So therefore, old age is the time where you have the maximum challenge, not the youth. Right? And you started realizing that this body also, you can't rely on it. You come to realize that, is it not? So far, because of bodily identification, the body was doing some work. You have put all your faith in this body. But a time comes in life, you also realize that you can't trust this body either. You can't trust this body either, right? It is like a boat which has got a lot of holes in it, right? And the water is getting into the boat from all the holes. So what will happen? The boat will sink. And you start realizing that that's what's going to happen to this body, right? So, and with such a boat, you can't travel anymore further, right? So, right in the middle of an ocean, if you are stuck with a boat like this, right, that is when this question comes. That is the challenge ahead of us, right? So, in order to get over this old age, it is for that is sannyasa yogam. That's what Krishna is talking about in this chapter. Sannyasa yogam. What one should do at the old age. Then youth, we thought youth was the challenge, and because normally that is how it is being educated to people, isn't it? That you work hard, get all the degrees in the world, and get a career, and then go up in your career and buy a big house and get married, have children. These are all considered to be challenges. Krishna doesn't say that any of them has a challenge. Krishna says all that is useless, he says. Krishna is saying that how you are able to handle your old age. When death is waiting, when you know it's getting closer, how your body is withering away, and you become helpless, and all other things like diseases comes one after the other, and then along with that, all other people around you are leaving you one after the other. They are also going, and what happening to you? That is what the challenge of the old age is. That's what Krishna is making clear, right? So, in order to win this old age, is sannyasa yogam, Krishna is saying here, right? Sannyasam means tyagam, sacrifice, right? Giving up. You cannot win this battle with karmam. In the youth, you are battling with karmam. Right? You are winning everything through karma. But the problems of old age, you cannot win through karma. That's the important thing. Right? So therefore, you are completely giving up karma once for all. Having realized the power, what karma is worth. Right? So you are, with the root itself, you are throwing away karma. Right? Kartrutva buddhi. That's what giving up karma means. Kartrutva buddhi. Right? So, I am not doing anything. I am not a doer. And that silence that comes in, that is how this chapter begins. It says here, Sarveshu api aditeshu adhyayeshu uktaha arthaha asmin adhyaye avagamyate arjunaha तो सन्यास त्याग शब्दार्थयो एवा विशेषम बुबुलसु उवाचा. Everything that was spoken in the previous chapters, its summary is in this chapter, right? In order to understand the meaning of the word sannyasam and tyagam, the two important words, sannyasam and tyagam, Arjuna is asking the question in the first words. That's the first question Arjuna has asked to Krishna. What does it mean by sannyasam? What does it mean by tyagam? Tyagam, you know, means sacrifice, to sacrifice everything. That's called tyagam. What does it mean actually? Sannyasam means what? What does tyagam mean? He asked that question, right? So, in order to understand that,
that after a life in this world, at the old age, one becomes very inward looking and start looking at life from what he has gone through in this world. And naturally there is a tendency to separate from this world, because you start realizing, what was I doing here? What is my relationship with this world and all the people around me? Things like that, right? So, that silence that comes in one's life, actually it is a kind of a satisfaction within, right? And it is a indication of that shanti inside, right? Because Bhagavad Gita finishes with this word shanti. Shanti has been given a lot of importance to it, right? You saw in the Bhagavatam also, it mentions there, isn't it? Param shantim. Shantim upaiti sakshal. It says in the, which one? In the Ekadasha Skanda. So if you look at it that way, Tataparam shanti upaiti sakshal. You have to connect always Bhagavad Gita with Bhagavatam. Otherwise, you will get a better understanding what various places in Bhagavatam. You will see this. If you look into the 11th canto, first chapter itself, yeah, fourth verse, you see there. Naivanyada paribhavo sivavel kadanjil mal samshrayasa vibhavo nahanasya nityam andakunim yadukulasya vidhaya venu tambasya vannimiva shanti mupemi dhama. Shanti is our perfect state. Shanti, peace inside. Shanti. Ataparam shanti mupeji sakshat. And then if you go into the next chapter, 43rd verse, who Kavi Maharshi is saying there? What did Kavi say? 43rd verse, second chapter. Ityachyuta angrim, if you execute Bhagavata Dharmam properly, the end result will be Ityachyuta angrim bhajato nivrityam bhakti virati bhagaval prabodaha. Bhavandi vai Bhagavata Rajam Tadaparam Shanti Mupedi Sakshaya. So Shanti is a goal. Shanti is the nature of the soul. Shandoyam Atma, says Upanishad. Atma means Shanti. Atma doesn't mean anything else. Atma means Shanti state. So if you are situated in the platform of the soul, it means you are in the Shanti state. Yeah? So Kavi Maharshi spoke Bhagavata Dharmam, isn't it? Navayogi's first one is Kavi. So Kavi spoke Bhagavata Dharmam and he concluded with that verse. Ityachyudangrim bhajato anuvrtya bhakti virakti bhagaval prabodaha. So if you execute Bhagavata Dharmam, the end result will be bhakti virakti bhagavat prabodham. Means what? Bhakti, vairagyam, jnanam. Bhakti, virakti, Bhagavad Prabodha means jnanam. What is Krishna? That understanding. Bhakti, virakti means vairagyam and jnanam. Bhakti, jnanam, vairagyam, in other words. These three things, right? Bhavandi vai. Bhagavadasya rajam, tadaparam shanti mupaiti sakshal. If these three things have come inside in a person, the end result of that will be shanti mupaiti sakshal. He will soon be in the shanti state. So, that is in the Bhagavadam, right? And then Krishna said this in the Bhagavad Gita. Is it not? Yeah. Tal prasadal param shandim sthanam prapsasi shashvatam. Tameva sharanam gacha sarvabhavena bharada. Tal prasadal param shandim sthanam prapsasi shashvatam. So this shanti is the goal of spiritual life, to reach that shanti. In Vedam you will see this, after every Upanishad mantram, Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. You will see that, isn't it? Kathopanishad, Kenopanishad, any Upanishad if you take, you will see it finishes with this Shanti mantram. It's called Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Right? So, Param Shantim Sthanam Prapsyasi Shashvatam. So, Krishna concluded that, and if you look into the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, again, Krishna repeats that. Shraddhavan labade jnanam. Talpara samyadendriya. Jnanam labdhva param shandim. Ajarenadi gachadi. Again, stressing the importance of shandi. Yeah? Shraddhavan labade jnanam. A faithful man who is dedicated to transcendental knowledge and who subdues his senses is eligible to achieve such knowledge. And he having achieved it quickly, attains the supreme spiritual peace. So, Shanti is translated like that. Supreme spiritual peace. And that is the nature of the soul. So, in Bhagavad Gita, there are many places. Again, Bhoktanam Yajnatavasam, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, Sukhradam, Sarvabhudanam, Nyatvamam, Shanti Mruchari. So, this word Shanti is so important. In several places Krishna has spoken, and in the Bhagavatam Navayogis have spoken, and in other places as well in Bhagavatam, right? So Shanti, Shanti is Ajirenadi Gachari. That means once self-realization happens or spiritual knowledge has started working, then without much delay the Shanti stage will come to him. Shanti stage will come to him. That's what he's saying here. Achirenadi gachari. Achirena means without further delay. The Shanti state will come, right? That means when this knowledge becomes matured in a person, spiritual knowledge, right? Or in other words, when this knowledge has actually affected us properly, it has influenced us properly, that sweetness of that knowledge, the sweetness of that knowledge is Shanti. Is Shanti. And that Shanti is what Krishna is referring to as sannyasam. That state of Shanti is sannyasam, right? So sannyasam means Shanti, the Shanti, right? Shanti, what is the problem of not having the Shanti? Why we don't get Shanti? Because by those things which are causing problems for us in getting that Shanti, and that is what has to be leave us, that has to leave us, right? Not giving up, but leaving them. Them leaving us, in other words, right? It's just like, you're not giving up yourself, right? Just like you're hungry, you want a meal, you had a meal, and after some time again you become hungry, and then you want another meal again. Not in that way. It has to happen in such a way that I don't want it anymore. It's a difference there, isn't it? Just to give an example, that if you're hungry, you want a meal, you had a meal. For some time you are happy, but afterwards you are asking for a meal again when you are hungry. Not in that way. Once for all, from inside, that desire has gone, of desire to eat, has gone from inside. That is Shanti. That state is Shanti. Right? So, that means so many things in this world, right? getting to know that they have nothing to do with me. You see, our connection with this world is like that, is it not? Somehow or the other, in avidya, in ignorance, we have made all a huge empire around us in the name of friends, family, society and all that. And we think they are all part of us. Actually, they have nothing to do with us. Right? If you think deeply, you can understand that. All these so-called friends, family, society and everything, we have taken that inside us and put it inside very strongly and holding on to it, thinking that I can only exist with all these things together. The soul, Antaryami, doesn't need any of these things. So when proper knowledge comes in, what happens? One after the other, all these things I am holding on very dearly to myself, they are leaving me one after the other. And because through knowledge it happens, with awareness that Antaryami or Atma inside doesn't need any of these things. That is nothing to do with me. I have pulled them inside myself and I created this situation. This awareness is what he is referring to here. Right? So, Tyagam. So, and in that process, what happens? Something you like it, some things you don't like it, something is very dear to you, something is not so much dear to you, and you started holding on to them in this way. When you realize the self, what happens? You start realizing none of this is dear to me, and I don't need any of them, and none of them is a part of me. Mainly referring to this body, subtle gross body, subtle body, senses, mind. If they are not dear to you, what to talk about all the other things? Family, friends and society and everything. Even that has nothing to do with you. But to come to that realization, that is what Krishna is talking about here. At the old age, if this realization comes to a person, then it is itself, he says, Krishna is saying here, that that all these things has only caused problems for me. It has not really helped me. They have taken a lot of my time and they didn't allow me to realize the truth in my life. They took a lot of my time in various ways. Right? So, old age, Krishna is saying that it is an age where all these experiments, what you have done in life, has to come to an end. We did a lot of experiments with our own life, is it not? We tried. Everything was an experiment. Marriage is an experiment. Job is an experiment. Friendship is an experiment. All relationships with the world is an experiment. We try and make experiments with everything, saying that this will help, that might help, that will help. But to realize that none of them will help, actually, the only connection you have is with Antaryami. And coming to this realization deep inside, Krishna says, is sannyasam. When you realize that, that is sannyasam. Krishna calls it as sannyasam. Right? So, so that is why this is the problems what we have today. Right? In the olden days, when families lived together, there will be old people at home. And they won't get affected by day-to-day disturbances like the young people, the older generation, because they have gone through life, they have seen the life, what it is, right? An old person, the education he could give to other members in the family, a university cannot give it today. Yeah. So, when they lived here, we won't know their presence. Yeah, we will not notice that so much, their effect on you, right? But sometimes from them, due to their realizations in life, some of the most intricate understanding of Vedantam will come through them to the people, other members in the family, right? And so that is the way it is. This knowledge of life, what is this life all about, That knowledge universities don't teach you. University only pumps up your false ego and makes you to, you have to achieve all these things to become successful in life. And how much money have you made in life? This is how university is evaluating everybody. And that's the kind of knowledge. And that has gone, so much garbage has gone inside. And then we are completely puzzled by that in life, right? With that kind of knowledge. But we didn't learn what we should have learned in life, we didn't learn. But all that was not required, so much unwanted knowledge has gone in, right? So, so many people, one sannyasi mentions this in one instance, when he was traveling, right? So, was going through the security check in the airport. So the sannyasi was walking through the, he has to go through the security check. The Prabhupada used to make fun of that. He said that even sannyasis, they are suspecting like a terrorist now, he says. You know, this is how we have become, this society. A sannyasi has to walk through the security gate. That means our society is so degraded that you cannot see what is right and what is wrong, who is good and who is bad. And we cannot even understand a person properly. So therefore, we put everybody through the screening system. Right? Imagine a security with his danda going through, checking all, whether he's carrying anything. So from that it's obvious. And even it started at the time when Prabhupada was traveling. It was at that time. Because this terrorism business more or less built up from then on, isn't it? So one or two occasions he mentioned this. He says, you see, this is the world we are now, that they don't even trust anyone, right? So one sannyasi was going through, and and there were many people, sometimes people are doing all these kind of jobs now, who have studied Vedam and Shastram and all, they are forced to do this kind of job, right? And but still that samskaram has not gone from inside. So when one sannyasi came through the security check, the security man asked him, which Vedam? He said, which part of the Vedam are you from? You see, Vedam has gone, Rig Vedam, Yajur Vedam, Sam Vedam, Atharva Vedam, right? So the sannyasi said, I am from the Krishna Yajur Vedam, he said. So he said, which sutram? There is in Vedam also there is sutram, Abhastambam, Baudalayanam and all that. So he said, I am a Rigvedi and from the Baudalayana Sutram, he said. So sannyasi could see that this person has taken up the job, but his samskaram has not left him. When he saw the sannyasi, he knew how to speak. Instead of inquiring about other things, he wanted to know which Vedam he belonged to, which shakha or branch of the Vedam he belonged to, and what sutram he has been in his Vedic tradition and all that. Right. So, this knowledge does not leave a person if it has gone in, right? And in the 15th chapter, Krishna calls it a samsara vriksham. Do you remember that? In the Purushottama Yogam chapter, he calls it a samsara vriksham, the tree of material existence, right? And he called it there, the root is avidya. Ignorance is the root of that, right? And that experiences in life, for example, all our life in this world is all the branch of the stem of the tree, right? So, and it says here that it gives you fruits, sweet as well as bitter fruits. There's a whole description of the tree. Root upside down, branches and stem to the top, right? So, so samsaram, material existence, right? That existence in that way, format, right? In Bhagavadam when it came, the same thing brought to Bhagavadam is Nigama Galpadaror Galidam Bhalam Shuga Mukhad Amrita Dravasam Yudam. Vedavyasa Maharshi put it in a different way. What he said was that when you become mature, or when the fruits become ripe, it falls. Bhalam galidam. Nigamakalpada or galidam bhalam. Similarly, and that ripened fruit, when it falls, old age is considered to be like that. If your life has been proper in this world, with spiritual understanding, right, you have gone through your material life, right, and in the middle of all the turmoil and all the problems of this world, family problems and health problems and social problems, so many problems like that, right, all of that, but in the middle of all that, you have executed sadhana properly, adhyatma sadhana, spiritual sadhana, right? And due to that, that includes everything. The chanting the holy name, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Satsangam, deity worship, everything. If everything has been done well in the middle of all these things, right? Ultimately, you become properly matured at the end. Because this knowledge has helped you not to get disturbed by everything what happened in life all around us, right? And at the old age, if through your spiritual practices in life, in the middle of all the chaos and confusion throughout, if you have survived all that and came out with this spiritual realization inside, then Krishna is saying here that he is the one who is referred to in this chapter. A person who comes out through that peacefully, right? And that is called Moksha Sannyasa Yoga. Moksha Sannyasa Yoga means a person who has executed his spiritual practices properly and went through these different stages in life of brahmachari, grahastha and all that, and finally became free from all kinds of entanglements and became totally realized inside that all these things have nothing to do with me. I am not a part of this. The only relationship is with Krishna. If this realization has come to him, and that proper awareness has come to him, he is a sannyasi, Krishna says. He is a yogi. And he is qualified for moksha. That's the way he puts it. That means this freedom comes through knowledge of the self. Atma jnanam. And that is why Adhyatma Vidya, Brahma Vidya is given such a higher position compared to all other knowledge. All the university knowledge is only for filling the belly or to make money. That's all what it did. Adhyatma Vidya makes a person perfect at his end of life. He leaves this world with full knowledge of what this world is about. That means this world has nothing to do with me. The so-called world means not only this physical world. We are talking about all the other relationship with the world, with the members, with the public, with the government, with this country and with the society, with the family, all everything, right? So, this freedom will only come through spiritual knowledge. There is no other way. So, that freedom what you get at the old age, to become free from all this bondage, what we have created, right, by realizing the self, and that freedom what you experience that at that time, that is moksha sannyasam. That is what is called moksha sannyasam. Krishna calls it as moksha sannyasam. Let's get into the verses now. Arjuna vacha sannyasasya mahabaho tattvamichhami vedidam tyagasya cha hrishikesha prithakkeshi nishudanam. Arjuna asked this question that I want to understand the tattvam of this sannyasam. What does sannyasam mean? Spiritual life is not a big thing in the sense that your intelligence is not to help you very much. What will help in spiritual life is, as Krishna is going to talk about that before, that Arjuna is also asking the same question, that where are you now in life? If after passing through a life of turmoil in life, in various ways it comes, isn't it, childhood, boyhood, youthhood, and finally old age. By the time you come to that old age, what's your connection with the world? Have you understood that? That's what Arjuna is going to talk about. Yeah, he says here, sannyasam sannyasasya sannyasa shabdartasya iti edathe mahabaho tattvam
Tasya bhavaha yathatmyam. Iti edad ichyami vedidam yadum tyagasya ja tyaga shabdartasya iti edad hrishikesha prithak idaredara vibhagada keshi nishudana.
Arjuna says to Krishna, Krishna, sannyasam tyagam, the two words, right? I would like to know exactly what they mean and what is the difference between the two, right? And this was the first question from Arjuna, right? So, sannyasasya tattvam vedidam ichyami. I want to understand the tattvam of sannyasam, he says. What does tattvam mean? Tattvam mean here knowledge of the self. Alpa jnanam, the knowledge about the self, right? Right. Tattvam. For example, if you take a flower, what is the tattvam of the flower? Its essential nature, right? That means when the flower is like that, what does it have its effect on us, others, right? Sannyasam, similarly, the word sannyasam, right? It is possible that in sannyasam, one can have a complete experience of the self. Complete experience of the self, right? Arjuna is asking this question at this point that what exactly are you trying to say with sannyasam? It's not so simple. You know, normally people, when you say sannyasi means, what does we think? A man wearing saffron clothes, danda in the hand, and we think, oh, he's a sannyasi, we say. Beyond that, we don't think about it, do we? And that is why it's so difficult now. There is a whole Upanishad about sannyasam. It's called Sannyasa Upanishad. Yeah, they talks only about sannyasam. So sannyasam is that state of consciousness, right? So, and this sannyasam is discussed in the commentary also a lot. In the Bhagavad Gita commentary, it is spoken a lot, right? So therefore, when they read the commentary, they'll start thinking, oh, I have nothing to do with it. Because I'm not a sannyasi anyway. When they read the Bhashyam commentary, they see this word sannyasam coming up in many, many places, right? So when they see that word sannyasam, they think, I'm not a sannyasi anyway, so it's not applicable to me. That's how they take it. But that is not how to understand this, right? So, normally the sannyasi's picture is saffron clothes, shaved up head, danda in the hand, and things like that. You know, how they, the average sannyasi, all types of sannyasis are there now. So we get all kinds of impressions also about them. Acharya Swamiji has his four disciple sannyasis, right? Today we have a picture of that in the books. You see him sitting there, Padmabhada, Sureshwara, Hastamalaga and Thotaga on either side. And they are all sannyasis. And in that picture, he is presented as a sannyasi. Is it not? Everybody consider him, they are as ideal sannyasis, original sannyasis, right? Even there is misunderstanding. Yeah. People think that this Dashanami Sampradaya, what it is called, it is mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita also. Prabhupada mentions that. The 10 titles of the sannyasis, Bharati, Puri, Saraswati. In this way, there are titles for the sannyasis. They are called Dashanami, 10 different names, right? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also took that sannyasam. And similarly, all others followed the same thing, right? There is a, we don't know this clearly, who started this system, right? But people, many people say it started from Shankaracharya's time. They say like that. He started the system, right? But one who have gone a lot of deeply to understand this, they have a different opinion about it.
what they are saying, this sampradaya, this system, has come even after his time, somewhere later. It has happened like that. Some acharyas who have come afterwards has created this situation like the way it is. Why they say like that is, Shankaracharya, when he took sannyasam, he didn't change his name to any of these things. He was still Shankara when he was a brahmachari, and when he was a sannyasi also he remained as a Shankara. He didn't use the title like Saraswati, Bharati, Puri or anything like that. He himself didn't use them in his life. Right? And then similarly, if you look at his disciples, Sureshwara, Padmavada, Hastamalaya and all that, they also didn't use any of these things. So there is an opinion like that. It was not him who started this. It was started by somebody later, or some people together have started it, a system like that. So therefore, that is how all these titles have come. Tirtha, for example, Puri, and Saraswati. None of them you find in Shankaracharya himself or in his disciples. So some people are saying that it was not started by him. It has developed at a much later time, right? So for them, for Ajari Swamiji and others, right, what was the sannyasam for them? Tattvajnanam. Knowledge of the self. That is what they gave importance to. They didn't give importance to these names and titles, things like that, right? They consider karmam has left them completely, and they reached through tattvajnanam, they had come to the state of parivrajam. That means they were able to move around freely without attached to anything, totally disconnected from the world, in the sense that the world had no more impact on them anymore, right? So, Ajari Swamiji calls a jnani's state of consciousness, alpanishta, he calls it a sannyasam. That is how he said that. Yeah? Jnanam sannyasa lakshanam. Jnanam sannyasa lakshanam. That is how he has spoken about sannyasam, right? Then, Ramanujacharya, who came later, right? He said that because by then sannyasis have been, it's an ongoing thing all the time. Then later on, nowadays it is institution sannyasis also there. But without, there was, Sanatana Dharma existed without these institutions once. So there also there was sannyasis. Now you can see in Kumbh Mela, there were loads of people who come there. And in there, they were called different akhadas, they were calling. Juna, akhada and all others. Mahamandaleshwar and all that. And different parts of the country, they have, there is another sannyasa system which is coming through the, through that, babas from the Himalayas, right? Right. So, in Ramanujacharya's time, what he did was, he put the three dandas together and tied them together. And that is how Tridandam came. Three dandas, right? In the Shastram, sannyasi has got this thread and shikha and everything, right? So Ramanujacharya make it like that. He changed that into that pattern, right? And Ramanujacharya also said that, only a householder should become a sannyasi. He said like that, right? Because Ramanuja himself had come like that. He was a householder and then he became a sannyasi, right? And he said that through grahastha ashrama. Grahastha ashrama means what? Karmakandam. Karmakandam applies to them. You see, it's only now we are totally disconnected with the Vedam, isn't it? And that is why everything has to be spoken now. In the olden days, it wasn't like that, because it was automatically understood. In the time of Ramanujacharya and Madhvacharya and all that, people knew what that means, right? Varnashrama dharma means, right? So, at that time, he used to say, Ramanujacharya's time, they used to say that, one who has not come through grihasthashramam and through karmagandam, and but if he has taken sannyasam like that, then if you see him, you should bathe straight away. You should bathe straight away. Because he has not come through the proper system. That was, he has introduced that, right? So, Sri Vaishnava Sampradayam, sannyasam is allowed, right? But he has to come through grihasthashramam. And if you have come without grihasthashramam and karmagandam, then if you have seen a sannyasi like that, you should bathe straight away, right? So that is their system. Then Madhvacharya came in the 13th century. Acharya Swamiji came in the 8th century. Ramanuja came in 11th century. And Madhvacharya came in the 13th century. And all three of them have commented on Bhagavad Gita. All three of them have commented on Brahma Sutram. And all three of them have commented on the 10 Upanishads which Shankaracharya has commented. In other words, in Siddhantam they have difference of opinion. In Siddhantam. But on the authority of the Vedam, they all accept the same thing. There is no difference of opinion. They believe Vedam is the authority, number one. They also accept Vedam is for self-realization, Brahma Vidya. On the goal, there is no difference of opinion among them. On the authority of the Vedam, there is no difference of opinion. On Siddhantam, there is differences. Vishishtadvaitam, Advaitam, Dvaitam. These three are the beginning. And then later on, much later, others came like Vallabhacharya and Vishnu, Nimbarka and also Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all, as they have put their own additions to it. But Sanatana Dharmam in its roots is based on these three. Dvaitam, Vishishtadvaitam, Advaitam. And it is on that basis, it has always been like that. Yeah. So, so when Madhvacharya came, what happened was, he changed Ramanuja's system and made it like Shankaracharya's system. He brought it back. Madhvacharya brought it back, Shankaracharya's system. Again, right? So, even though they object Shankaracharya philosophically on the Siddhantam level, right, their sannyasam became Ekadandam. Shankaracharya's system is one dandam, Ekadandam. So Madhvacharya brought back Ekadandam back again, right? After that, what you will find here is that by then for a long time there was nothing much happening. Then it was only Ramakrishna Mission started again with Vivekananda and all that. So by then, sannyasam has changed its pattern. It has become seva then. Manava seva, Madhava seva. Ramanuja, Shankara or Madhvacharya didn't do it. They believed in Shastram and in knowledge. But by the time Ramakrishna Mission came, which is the recent one, isn't it? Not that long. This has changed its pattern. It has become more like service to the society, social service, and all started. They started that. And after that, all the other institutions which has come after Ramakrishna Mission, they also followed the same thing. And now, that's the only thing now. If you look at it, everybody wants to give food for life now. And they are competing on that, all institutions. There is not much spiritual knowledge anymore. Spiritual knowledge has gone completely. Everybody is talking about where can I give more food to more people. It has become like that now. So that is how institutions have developed that. Sannyasam has become more like a social service, in other words. Manava seva. Seva has become the priority, right? So, so sannyasam keeps changing its form like this. Throughout history, in Acharya Swamiji's time, Ramanuja's time, Madhva's time, it was knowledge. They all were debating each other on the Siddhantam side of it. But as far as they were concerned, Vedam is authority. You cannot question Vedam, one thing. Because you have to think also about these things. Otherwise you won't understand the importance of Vedam. People are so, nowadays, because there is no education on these sides, right?
lot of people come out with all stupid understanding about the Vedam. Vedam's authority is concerned, right? Who wrote the Vedam? From whom? Through rishis we got it, right? Rishis are the personalities through whom Vedam was revealed to this world. Who are these rishis? Rishis are human beings, no doubt. What is the difference between the rishis and the ordinary people? In Sattvagunam, they are way ahead of us. Due to their higher level of Sattvagunam, the highest knowledge of Vedam was revealed to them, and they don't live in the same level as we do. That is why these different levels of the world, seven worlds, we talk about Maharlogam, Janalogam, Tapolokam. All these three planets are their occupation. Well, that's where they live. They live in those plane, that level of that world they live. That means Maharlogam, Rishi's Logam, Janalogam, Tapolokam. You can see Shruti Gita was discussed in Janalogam between Narayana Maharshi and Narada Maharshi. It's not. So, those who have gone beyond this world, and due to their Sattvagunam inside and to their knowledge and cultivation of knowledge, they are the rishis. And it is through them Vedam has come. So therefore all the acharyas, they have accepted that this knowledge what was revealed through Vedam is not questionable anymore, because it's their experience it is. Rishis are saying to us, they are not interested in converting people to their faith or anything. What they have told us is, look, we have realized this knowledge through austerities and penances, tapasya mainly, and through their various engagements. We have realized this knowledge. If you want to realize it, you can also realize it. This is what we have realized. That's all they are telling us. They are not forcing us, you follow me, or if you follow me, you will get this. They are not offering anything. What they are saying to us is, we have practiced it, we have realized it. You can also practice it, you can also realize it, it's your choice. That's how they left it. And that is how Sanatana Dharma was always. Not forcing on anyone, like in the world today what's happening. Everybody is busy in converting everyone, isn't it? You join my club and then you will be alright. Others, everyone else is wrong. This is not how the rishis spoke. Rishis never spoke like that. That is why in Sanatana Dharmam, this system, this freedom is given to the person. When you feel that you don't know what the life is all about and you are searching for the truth, rishis are saying to us, we have practiced this. And they went to the forest and all the great rishis, there is not one, many of them, isn't it? That's why in Bhagavatam, repeatedly they are listed all the time. Isn't it? When Parikshit was giving up the body, leaving the world, all the rishis came there. When Rukmini was getting married, all the rishis were there. Samanta Panchakam, when the solar eclipse, Krishna went there with all the people from Dwarka, all the rishis came there. Why is it? Because Krishna says that there is a discussion between Krishna and the rishis there. And Krishna is saying there to the rishis that with your presence, it is only your presence that makes this whole people who have come here to get your association. Krishna says about the rishis there at that time. So, rishis' approach is very simple, very straightforward. They are saying to us, we have received this knowledge of the Vedam in our meditations. That is how Vedam has come. Is it not? And that knowledge, we practice that, what we received from a higher level, higher plane. Krishna has revealed through them this knowledge due to their high degree of Sattvagunam in them. And only in Sattvagunam knowledge will happen. First thing is to understand that. With Tamogunam and Rajogunam, no knowledge will come. Proper knowledge won't come. You will get all the other, how to make bombs and how to kill others. That kind of knowledge you will get in Rajogunam and Tamogunam. Spiritual knowledge, knowledge of the self, won't happen in Rajogunam or Tamogunam. Sattvān sanjāyate jñānam, Krishna says. And the rishis through Sattvagunam, they develop the highest degree of Sattvagunam. Therefore, they received the spiritual knowledge, obviously. And they practiced it and they realized it. And they are telling us, you can also practice it, you can also realize it, it's up to you. Here it is. And that is what they gave us in the form of Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Sutram, all the other Vedic literature. That is how it has come.
So,
later on what happened was, this is the beginning time we are talking about. Yeah? They didn't give importance to your dress and all that. Obviously, there was no jeans or anything at that time. They all wore dhotis, right? But now time has gone, so many thousands of years have gone. And now recently, there was a man called, you know, Osho. He was also a sannyasi, he says. He was also a sannyasi, right? And so he has his own sannyasam slave, right? So it has nothing to do with what Krishna is talking about here. Osho sannyasam. And similarly, there were so many other people like that who have spoken about sannyasam, right? So, so if you clearly analyze all these things, different people who come after that and introduced their own style of sannyasam and people who followed them, right? This is how, you know, because of this what happened? Because of this what happened was that an ordinary person start thinking, actually what is sannyasam? What is sannyasam? The question will come, is it not? With all these different types of sannyasam what we face today, there is sannyasam, sannyasam in Ishkon, sannyasam in Art of Living, sannyasam in Chinmaya Mission, sannyasam in Amritanandamayi Mission, sannyasam in Ramakrishna Mission. Naturally, a question will ask, people will ask, what is sannyasam then? And when you look back into the history, from Shankaracharya's time, Ramanuja, Madhva, and all, how this understanding of sannyasam has changed. That it is important to know that. Because, why I'm saying this is, Arjuna is asking this question, what is sannyasam? Why did Arjuna ask this question? What is sannyasam? Because Arjuna was also getting confused like us in his time. He was getting confused. What is sannyasam means? So that is why the opening verse itself is, he is asking Krishna, what is sannyasam? You have to think this way also. Arjuna must have a reason to ask that question. If we are confused about sannyasam, when Arjuna is confused about sannyasam, is it any surprise that we are confused about sannyasam? Arjuna, right in front of Krishna, is asking, he is confused, he is saying that, right? So, so it is the same reason, like we are feeling about sannyasam, exactly. The thing is that if you are locked up in one institution, then you think everything that institution does is the only perfect thing. Everybody else does not know. Only the institution knows, because I am following this institution. That's how you will conclude. But then there is sannyasam in the so many other institutions also, is it not? For example, Swaminarayan, they have their sannyasis, and like Ishkon has their sannyasis. So sannyasa ashramam changes according to the institutions also in a different way. They are not exactly the same. The sannyasa mantram given for Ishkon sannyasam is different from the sannyasam given for the Swaminarayans. And similarly, sannyasam in the Shankaracharya matam is different. Ramanuja's matam is different. So everywhere, for them, some of them system is, it lasts for a week time to sannyasa ashram. The ceremonies last for over a week to give them the sannyasa ashram. And before them there, we also have a system in Ishkon where this takes a few hours, but at the same time you are put in the list for few years and all that. Just to verify that you are behaving properly and doing things properly and all that. So that's every institution does that in different ways, right? So Arjuna is saying, with sannyasam, what will happen to your person? Yeah, and he says here that with sannyasam, will one develop realization? That's one question, right? Self-realization, will it happen, right? Then earlier we saw, by dressing up, you don't become a sannyasi, right? So, in Smriti, in Upanishads also, the rishis have analyzed this, sannyasam, right? They are saying there, first of all, the desires must go from inside. In the Upanishads, they are talking about it. the desires must leave a person, first of all, right? And knowledge must be there in a sannyasi, right? And Vedanta Vijnanasu Siddhidatval Sannyasa Yoga Bideya Shuddha Sattvaha. This is the Upanishad statement, right? So, Upanishad is talking about this, and through that knowledge, through knowing that, and through mananam and nididhyasanam, that means after studying the Shastram, and through the process of mananam and nididhyasanam, you become free from viparita jnanam. Viparita jnanam means that normally in our conditioned stage, we have doubts in our mind, isn't it? About everything. When something is spoken, your mind will start analyzing straight away. And then you will, sometimes you may agree with it, sometimes you may disagree with it. So, quite often, anything from the Shastram, if the mind has got problems, it's called Viparita Jnanam. And in your mind, you start thinking something opposite to what Shastram has spoken. That means, you are not able to accept it within yourself. Yeah? So, so it is for that purpose that when conclusions from the Shastram, through mananam and nididhyasanam, the two processes, you have to remove these doubts inside. Viparita jnanam it's called. Viparita jnanam means Shastram says something, but your mind is saying exactly opposite from inside. So how to remove that? And therefore that, and in order to do that, one has to approach a realized person and able to discuss with them, and they will give you the guidance and directions, and along with that, but that person should be fully established in the self with whom you are consulting, right? And you become free from this problem of viparita jnanam and samshayam. And then your chittam comes to the yoga sthiti, yoga state, right? So, and this is a dharmam of a yadi, of a sannyasi, right? Krishna is saying here that great souls who are self-realized, if you get their association, they will be able to clear your doubts. Provided you get your association. And that association, Krishna has to give it to you when you are ready for it. It doesn't happen by your planning. It has to happen by Krishna's arrangement. Yeah. So, you will see this discussion many, many times coming up again and again. For example, if you look into the Ravana Maharshi's case also, you will see there is this discussion going on there. Yeah. So, there was one devotee, he was from Andhra, was a highly learned person, Kavyakanda Ganapati, that was his name, yeah. So he came to see Ravana Maharshi, and then they had the discussions. In them days, they were very adept in the knowledge, and Kavyakanda Ganapati was a very highly learned person, right? So this Kavyakanda Ganapati, while I asked Ramana Maharshi about this ashram. Now, Ramana Maharshi didn't go through any of these. Brahmachari, Grahastham, Vanaprastham, nothing. At the age of 16, he left home and came to Tiruvannamalai and stayed there. And Paramacharya says he was ideal sannyasi. And if you look at his clothes, he never wore saffron, he never had danda, nothing. So, you can see highly learned people, they understand sannyasam differently. Not the way we understand sannyasam. We look into the institution, into the dress, into the danda and all that. But they will look at that his state of consciousness of a person's. Right? So, Kavyakanda Ganapati asked Maharshi about different ashramam. Maharshi only spoke about Brahmachari ashram, Grahastha ashram and Vanaprastha ashram. Sannyasa ashram, he didn't talk about it. He didn't talk about it, right? So, so he told him that these things one should follow as a brahmachari and as a grihastha, and then vanaprastham practically was gone by then in his time. Maharshi's time is not that long back, isn't it? It was in the middle of last century, you can say, 1930 to 1950, during that time. This is the time all this happened. That means it's only about, you can say, about 75 years back happened. By then, Vanaprastha Ashram has gone completely. To some extent, Brahmachari Ashram was there, and Grihastha Ashram also was there, even though not in a perfect state. Right? And sannyasam has become just for a namesake. So, so there are many instances. People who have studied Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and then they leave home and go to some place where it's ideal for them to live a life of executing their bhajana, for bhajana purposes, right? Some holy place. And they live the rest of their life that way. They don't get involved in the world anymore. After a certain stage, after brahmachari and grihastha life, at some point they make a decision, now I have to leave. I'm getting prepared, ready to go. So whatever time that is left in life, utilize it for a self-realization or giving whole time for spiritual activity. And it is much easier if you move away from the society that way. So that practice has started at that time, right? So, because for a lot of them, and that system did work to an extent, right? Because children have left home and they can look after themselves, and you are not feeling so much absorbed with them anymore. You don't want to get involved in their life, right? And you started feeling the necessity to look up your own future. And that's when you start thinking about engaging in some spiritual practices, right? So, how to prepare yourself for the death, in other words, right? So, it is that time is vanaprastham. Vanaprastham is that stage. So, brahmachari and grihastham people can understand easily. But vanaprastham and sannyasam is a bit difficult for most of the people to understand. What is vanaprastham and sannyasam? So we'll discuss that tomorrow. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. In India,